This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Okay, guys. So, well, thank you for all joining us. We are here to talk about the WoW Diary and talk about how role-playing influenced World of Warcraft. And I'm Stephen Glicker, and I roll the Roll for Combat podcast. And I'm also friendly with John Stats, who was...
A level designer, the first level designer on World of Warcraft for... 10 years I worked there, so.
And for those of you who, now we're going to be focusing on the building of World of Warcraft and like vanilla WoW and like how it was actually built, because John was the very first 3D designer back when Blizzard was like itty bitty teeny tiny,
yeah.
And they were like still had people in the hallways in their office,
right.
And it was like you would think you're like in a dorm room, not a $1 billion company. It was very different back then. But John, let's give you some of the things he designed. He did Black Phantom Deeps, Blackland Lair, Black Rock Mountain, Black Rock Depths, Booty Bay, Karazhan, Loch Moden Dam, Lower Black Rock Spire, Molten Core, Razorfin Downs, Razorfin Crawl, Solomash, the Slag Pit, Upper Blackwatch Spire, the Wailing Caverns, Warsong Gulch, just the same name a few. So if any of you have played any of those, you have him to thank,
right.
Your character dying millions of times.
Yeah.
So he's the one.
My role on World of Warcraft, it was an art role, but I obviously was on a dev team. And the origin of the book was my first introduction to game development was World of Warcraft. I moved from advertising, Madison Avenue advertising in New York City, and I moved to Newport Beach, California, which was kind of junk, going straight into Blizzard. And the interesting thing about development is the designers there had time. I went into their office every day, and one of the things people don't realize is that when you're building your own editor, everything happens at the very tail end of the project. And what I mean by that is all the technology finishes, the editor finishes, and that's where all of the project is actually designed, on the last 10% of the dev cycle. So for years, the game designers have nothing to do but play other games, find out what works in those games, and then steal what works and fix what doesn't work and put it into their game, which was World of Warcraft. So although I wasn't on the design team at the time, I picked their brains. I sat in their office every single day and pitched my terrible game ideas to them. And because they were more experienced, and had time on their hands, they explained to me why these game ideas weren't applicable to a massively multiplayer game. And so I learned so much that I wrote a book about it, and it'll be coming out hopefully in June, and now I'm pushing it to August. I'm kickstartering the book about how we made World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I mean, so this is actually one of the reasons we're here is to promote John's book, and he, you know, it's very rare that you know anything about Blizzard, because Blizzard's so secretive, let alone a detailed explanation of how WoW was built from beginning to end. And I've actually read the book, and one of the fascinating things about it is how ordinary Blizzard is. Like, it's a company, like any others, and you have things like PR problems and vacation issues and, like, you know, things you just don't think about.
Salary, jealousies, everything that everybody goes. My first impression was that it was decorated like somebody's basement. There is, when around the food table, there's food stains in the carpet, just blackened with age. There's piles of dirty dishes in the sink that sit there for weeks and nobody wants to clean it. You don't dare open up the microwave because it is so disgusting. All the unglamorous aspects of game development that every company doesn't want you to see, that's what that book is about. It probably wouldn't have been written if I wasn't one of the roommates to who's now a chief of staff of the company. So they all knew I was writing this diary, and geez, 15 years later, you know, it's out, and So what I can actually bring this, what I'm going to bring this around to role-playing games is the origins of how you translate a role-playing game into a three-dimensional MUD, which is a multi-user dungeon, which is basically what World of Warcraft is. And one of the things that we noticed while we were developing WoW is how bad other games were. And that's usually you get funding, everyone's chasing, with EverQuest's success, everyone was chasing MMOs at the time. And a lot of the game design starts from, let's try to figure out how to make this concept work. And this, I think, applies to all game design. I'm now doing a board game, and I'm applying the Blizzard secret sauce formula to board game design. And I think it's everyone could take this advice and develop their own games by where to start. That's usually a lot of games break down where they're trying to, most the biggest mistake people usually make is they're trying to fulfill a fantasy. Like say you enjoy Castle Siege, you know, that type of fantasy. And then they try to shoehorn a bunch of game mechanics to achieve that fantasy. And we'd seen that a lot of times with massively multiplayer games where that was one of the things that people would try to achieve, and it's not fun. So what Blizzard usually does is they start with the what I call the moment-to-moment design. What feels good? Does the interface feel good? Does it feel fun to travel? Does it feel good to loot something? You start with the very, very basic things that aren't bullet points on the box. These aren't the things to crow about. Like, I'm basing a board game on the fact that everyone, it feels good to have your own set of colored dice. Each player has their own, and it just feels good to have them in your hand. And when you have a foundation that it's we all know rolling dice is fun. Okay, so that's a mechanic that I can build a game from. World of Warcraft did the same thing. It felt good to loot something. Now, what you have to do is we broke it down like, what is a role-playing game? That is where you start. What works about a role-playing game? And what you're doing is kind of what movies do. You're projecting yourself into a character, like movies would do it with Tom Cruise or the latest movie star. And as Spider-Man's flying through the streets of Manhattan, you see yourself as Spider-Man flying through the streets of Manhattan. Role-playing games are the same thing. You project yourself into the situation, and the role-playing happens where you increase your character's value. And it's okay to use things that are cliche, like trade skills, quests, and killing monsters are the only way that you increase your character's value. You increase your character's value by acquiring equipment. And basically, all of the gameplay of World of Warcraft comes from those three branches. And that's what every game does. That's what role-playing games do. From Dungeons & Dragons to all the board games about dungeons, these are the ways that you improve your character. It's that type of progression that is so addictive. And so a lot of people tried to do their own thing. They said, oh, well, we have to be inventive, and we try to do this other thing. And the founder of Blizzard would say, amateurs are the ones who try to do things different. They try to do the novelty thing where you're playing a dragon, you know, or there's 40 different classes in your game where you come up with, basically, they're duplicates of kind of the same game mechanics, and they call it a new class. They reskin it or something. So that's kind of what I think is good, is when you're starting with something that's a solid foundation. And that's kind of like, we didn't actually sit around at a table and discuss, well, how do we do, you know, an EverQuest, you know, type of game of a MUD. You know, everyone knew role-playing games, but what we didn't do is try to make it different. You know, it's starting with what works, and the scope of the game is where you start with the moment-to-moment design, and then you push it this way. Does it work? No, it's push it this way, and that defines the scope of the game. Blizzard's had failures where they've had big concept projects. We kill it internally because we're trying to shoehorn, you know, game mechanics, and nobody really hears about these projects. So Blizzard also releases what works, you know, you get the fans mostly see. So that's what I found was so interesting, is like all the mistakes that they've made, even on the popular games like World of Warcraft. So yeah, that's kind of like the gist of what where the book went.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things we want to talk about, so I presume everyone here plays WoW or Hearthstone or is familiar with it. So the big aspect is, so when WoW was being created, you had Warcraft, Starcraft, and Diablo, and that was it. And it's funny because, like, you know, when you think about D&D, you're thinking, oh yeah, the fighter, the mage, the rogue, like that was always there. Well, same thing, if you think about World of Warcraft, you think about, oh, there's the priest and the hunter and the warlock, and you're like, yeah. But none of that existed. Like, when you got on the project, it was like, oh, we're making World of Warcraft. What is it? A big world with Warcraft lore. Like, what are the classes like? We don't know. Like, what are the races? We don't know. Like, how is it going to play? We don't know. Like, everything had to be invented. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah. We, one of the biggest concerns was the opposite way. Like, in World of Warcraft, because you're translating an RTS, you have big buildings with units that, you have small buildings with gigantic units. Like, the units can't actually fit inside of those buildings. And in the opposite World of Warcraft, you've got these gigantic buildings, okay, because your player camera follows behind you. You can't have that camera bumping up against the ceiling. So that's why everything is so gigantic on such a big scale. And we wondered whether people would find this jarring, would it not fit into the Warcraft, because we'd never built anything 3D before. One of the programmers said the worst game a studio makes is their first 3D game, because when you try to translate what you've learned in a 2D game like an RTS like Warcraft 2 or Diablo 1, you apply that to a 3D game, you find out after all those systems and engines have been written, it doesn't work, the frame rate isn't fast enough, and then you have to start from scratch. I think they did Warcraft 3. We were doing Warcraft 3 and WoW at the same time, so we had two 3D engines that we were building at the same time. I think they started Warcraft 3 three times, like a playable game that just wasn't working. They needed, you know, more, you know,
fun.
Yeah, well, it broke down a lot of frame rate was a big problem with Warcraft 3, but that wasn't a problem with WoW. But yeah, it's
so look, give me an idea, because I remember, so I was hanging out with John back in the alpha. I can be one of the few people who said I played World of Warcraft, and I was the only person in the entire world at the time, which it's not a lot of people can claim that. So, and it was fascinating. But, you know, they only started out with, remember that, they started out with, was it six classes, or six races, and then at the very last second, after EverQuest 2 came out, they added the trolls, they added the gnomes, they like redid the whole skill system, was completely thrown out. Like, like they really were changing it a lot, because I saw many, and you go through that in the book, you see the pictures, like it went through a lot of iterations,
What's kind of funny, it starts out with no classes. Like when you're testing combat, you don't have things like a defense system. You don't have things like a spell resistance system. There's no such thing as equipment. Like when you're just testing out killing monsters, what is the distance between you and the monster when you're fighting? They considered a science fiction one of the biggest decisions. Do we do a StarCraft MMO or a Warcraft MMO? Because StarCraft was really big at the time. Warcraft 3 was, you know, it was years, you know, it was in the Where Are They Now features in magazines when they were talking about Warcraft 3. So it was all about StarCraft. So it was a lot of pressure to do a science fiction. And the founder of the company, Alan Adham, had decided that, look, it feels better to to go up to somebody and fight them with a sword. There's no, you don't have to explain how the game plays. But when you have science fiction, you're attacking things from a distance, and it's not as satisfying. It's not as personal because the monster is so far away. It's literally smaller. There's a less art of the monster on your screen when you're. So that actually is the deciding. That was, I think, the deciding factor that it looks better. And when you're starting out a game, first of all, it's ugly looking. That's a shocking thing that I'm used to Warcraft. When I first saw World of Warcraft, I was super underwhelmed. The first day on the project, I didn't know what the project was when I went, my move from New York to Newport Beach. It was a super tight, top secret project. And just on faith, I had a very successful advertising career. I left that, took a huge salary cut, moved to Newport Beach, and saw World of Warcraft, and there was no animations whatsoever. They were showing me, oh, this is what it's like to kill an ogre. And the ogre was a statue. There was no, like, there's an attack motion, and the ogre was standing there, and there's no death animation. So he says, okay, now the ogre's dead, but it's still standing there visually on the screen. And this is me, and this is me looting it, and he clicks on the ogre, and a window opens up. He doesn't crouch down. There's none of those animations are in-game. And it's just, so when you're starting out, there's no classes, okay? And the classes are decided. You were talking about what classes, like how do they design the classes? Like how do they decide which classes are going to be in the game? And there was Rune Master was one of the classes. They had, I think, basically 13 classes listed. And these were the game designers that had years and years of discussion before they had an editor that was, you know, open and feasible to, because what you don't want to do is take programmers and put them onto a game to test the game, okay? Because all that programming is then thrown away when you make an editor, when you make the real systems. So you can't test it too much before you actually get the editor. So again, at the tail end, by that time they had decided on the classes based on the available assets, like pet classes. Very expensive because each one of those pets has a whole animation set. That's why hunters were the pet class, because we had animations for bears already. We knew how bears moved. We had animations for owls and, you know, every type of. So we did not do, when demons was one of the races we wanted to launch with. Demons were shapeshifters in Chris Metzen's world, and each one of those shapeshifts meant a different animation set. It meant customizing armor to that shape of the creature that wasn't, you know, well,
actually,
very
what you bring
expensive.
Up is funny, just because I know you and I've talked about this a thousand times. Like, a lot of people think, oh, the hunters, like, they came up with this brilliant idea that they can go, like, tame the animals in the wild, and no other game did that. And it's like, no, we had the art assets, and yeah, we just didn't want to make new ones. So, yeah, that guy is now yours, and we made him smaller, mm-hmm, and he follows you around. Like, these decisions are made for none of the reasons that anyone thinks. It's always technical.
Right.
It's always, like, bandwidth issues. It's always, how do we get it implemented? How do we, you know, do we have to actually reskin these models, or what's the programming behind? And even things like, remember, like, Blood Elves. I mean, that now we're past, like, the beginning, but, like, Blood Elves in the beginning, people were like, oh, Blood Elves, they're at it for this. No, they added Blood Elves because they needed a pretty horde race.
Yeah.
And because the people, especially in Asia, did not play the ugly horde races. They hated them. They hated the horde races. And there was a huge imbalance between Alliance and Horde. So they added Blood Elves. And they're like, oh, they did it for this lore. And they added all this lore. It's like, now they needed a pretty race. And then they made a really ugly race for the Alliance because they didn't want the goblins. Because they're like, we need everyone to go to Horde.
Yeah.
And these are so many of these things are business decisions, which people don't realize.
Yeah. And you work with the assets that are available to you. You work with the code that's available to you. So many things were just hacked in. And like, as far as like, Rob Pardo came up with the idea that he liked the idea of a football team where there's different roles on the team. There's a quarterback role, there's a receiver role, and he envisioned that type of now Warcraft and pretty much all games have moved away from that hardcore. Even, you know, tabletop RPGs, you see a lot more DPSing in the tank classes. You see a lot more damage dealing in the healing classes, because those type of roles, that dedicated play type, is less flexible. One of the things we learned was that we couldn't do crazy game mechanics in a five-person dungeon, because they had to be kind of generic fights, because we couldn't rely on always a priest or a healer being in the group. We can always account on a rogue or warlock, high DPS class. So all the classes kind of, as time, as we learned that people liked flexibility, and we didn't like, oh, we only have four people for the dungeon, so there is no dungeon for us. You know, if it's more flexible, we get the fifth person, then we can actually play a dungeon. So yeah, that type of stuff is the unglamorous factors that decide what the game actually ends up looking, right. You know.
But at the time also, you wanted, because I remember the reboot, like when they added, because if you remember at the very beginning, like the trolls, like right. They didn't have their own area and the gnomes didn't. Like, oh yeah. They're like, oh yeah, they're under what was it, Ironforge. They're like, yeah, we threw them there. It's like, why is that? It's like, because we didn't have time to make their own area. Like, well, these are all...
the interesting thing was, now the gnomes on the Alliance and the trolls came about from an artist. We had this artist whose name was Roman Kenny. And Roman was a traditional pencil and paper concept artist. He was a hardcore EverQuest fan. And when he came from Warcraft 3, he wanted to work on WoW so bad. When he finally got the leave, they shipped Warcraft 3, he came over. He was just, you know, the mitts were off. He was just working late at nights. And what he would make is, he would make versions of monsters. Like, we had a skeleton, okay? And the skeleton had super cool, epic shoulder pads, and we just didn't want a generic skeleton. So what he would make customized versions of that skeleton that used all the skeleton animations. So instead of having just one shoulder pad here, he'd have two, or one with none, and he'd give one. Like, he'd make color changes, slight geometry changes, that there were no clippings, that didn't affect the animation team, and we called them Roman specials, where one person would use, I liked the idea of a white, okay? I love that concept from Dungeons and Dragons, just a white being, you know, the muscular type of, and he used, I think from the ghoul animation set, he made more of like a Frankenstein type of monster, and that's the version of the white, but it didn't require any other person on the team to know about it. So he would just work on this stuff at night, and we call them Roman specials. And Roman did, he showed how we had gnomes in the games, as NPCs, and we also had trolls as NPCs and as monsters. So we had all the attack animations, we had all that stuff, and an animation is basically, like a melee attack is the same thing as a spell. As far as the engine is concerned, it's a short-range spell that when you cast it, it plays an attack animation. And so there's actually no functionality, you know, as far as the engine's concerned. So he showed, look guys, we've got all this stuff, let's just make a couple more character classes. And the animators, he has to sell it to the producers who keep things on schedules, and the animators are EverQuest, you know, junkies too. They'll say, oh yeah, we'll do a dance for it. Well, it'll... So that's actually that's why we got gnomes at all. And we didn't have a capital city. We thought cities would be the best thing in World of Warcraft. That's where you get all your quests, okay, originally in cities. And then you go out in the world and you do the stuff, and then you come back to the capital city, and you turn in your quest. As it turned out, people didn't like traveling. That was one of the things we learned, is that, oh, people didn't like, that's downtime. You know, it's so we moved all the quests out of the capital city. Stormwind didn't have any, not a lot of quests. And now there's no functionality to the cities. And I think that we're losing some cities in the upcoming expansions, where I think they're nuking the Night Elf starter zone. They're changing. They're looking at the textures and the assets. Once again, they're looking at their assets to say, what can we do with these assets? And so, you know, generations later, new designers are taking, you know, working with what, yeah, so that's how we even got. Ogres were going to be a class. Roman really wanted ogres to be a playable class. That's how we got the Gordok ogre suit, where the player could transform from Dire Maul into a ogre that does the dance, the Chris Farley dance, is because all the animators had put in a lot more animations, and it was a robust, that's why you put on the suit. So we couldn't figure out how to make a female ogre attractive, as players, as females would want to play an ogre. And so that's why we didn't do ogres as a playable race. You know, we got halfway through the ogre and went, oh wait, what do we do with, you know, females? You know, because a lot of people were rejecting the orc female, the troll female, so we didn't want to compound it and make an ogre female, so.
So why don't we talk about the one thing we never talk about is dungeon design, because that's what you did the most, and obviously, you used to do tons of D&D hex-based dungeons when you were a kid, and just building dungeons for fun,
right?
Just for the hell of it. Yeah. I remember you showing me, and there's pictures in the book, and then you ended up now killing billions of poor characters with your dungeons. Yeah. You've done more deaths than probably anyone in the history of role-playing.
Well, yeah, I built half of the instance dungeons, and 90% of the non-instance dungeons, like the gold mines, the mountain caves, and stuff like that. At least for classic WoW, the initial, you know, vanilla WoW. Then when Blizzard actually had enough money to hire a team, originally we were budgeted for only 45 people max, and we thought, oh, who's going to do the quest design? Because that takes, well, just the producers will just in their spare time make quests. We had no budget. Maybe we'd hire some QA people and put them into a quest design roles. But as far as dungeons, that was me working on weekends and late at night, because what they were going to do is just copy and paste like one gold mine and copy and paste that around the entire world. And that was actually, that was in the budget. That was all, that's all we were budgeted for. Like when Blizzard bought their servers, Blizzard was owned by Vivendi Universal at the time. And this is the dot-com crash. The stock had gone to from $80 to like $4 or something ridiculous. Their CEO was being chased through the streets of Paris, and I'm not exaggerating, by paparazzi for scandals, and he went to prison. I mean, Vivendi was broke, and Blizzard, WoW was so expensive, we didn't have the money to buy our servers. We had to actually get a bank loan to buy our servers, which were, by the way, the largest single purchase of that type of server in the history of servers. I mean, it was a huge, huge operation. So for dungeon design, we weren't budgeted for anything more than one type of gold mine. So that was one of my things, is as Roman was geeking out on weekends and late at night on his own, making his own monsters, I was taking the texture set of gold mines and making different layouts and kind of selling it to the team. Hey, it's worth to have different layouts. People actually care about exploration when they get into the dungeon. To a large degree, I'm kind of wrong, because when you look at a dungeon, people care about the loot. they care about the loot, and all the dungeon designers, like the running joke is like, nobody looks up.
But you got to put the loot on the ceiling.
Yeah. No, like nobody looks up, and that's as a level designer, you can't really do anything with the floor, because you have line of sight issues that the designers, again, we're building, when you don't know the distance between you and the monster, you don't know how big to build the rooms. Okay, when you don't know how many people are in your party, and we didn't know to the very maybe 20% end of the project. So we're building dungeons on the faith that this will fit into the game. These will be assets that will be usable. It was definitely the most painful part of, and a lot of the MMOs were saying, oh yeah, dungeons were the hardest part of development because everything everybody knew about first-person shooters, which was really the only game building 3D architecture, we applied that to World of Warcraft and it was wrong. The editors, the type of editors, the type of geometry. I have a chapter in my book called 9 Months Down the Tube, where I'm working 80 hours plus or minus 10 hours a week, and I was building Carazon, and that was one of the first, that was our worst case scenario. I was doing Carazon in the year 2001, and it was I was using an editor called Radiant BSP. And Radiant, Radiant was what first-person shooters used. We learned only late into, 9 months into that, that BSP geometry wasn't usable. We couldn't stream that as well as we could stream with the rest of the world. And so we just threw all of those dungeons out the window. And when you're working on something, 80 hours a week, 90 hours a week, 100 hours a week, that kind of sucks when all that goes out the window.
No, yeah, I've read that. There's a chapter in here where it's like, oh yeah, all the, there was like, and it's not just you, so a team of like 40 working hundreds of hours a week, so.
Well, I was one of the dungeon, there's only a couple of us at the time.
But all the 3D assets were all thrown out, and you had to learn a new program.
Yeah, we had to use a program. Yeah, we learned a whole bunch of things wrong. We learned not to build gigantic dungeons. The Wailing Caverns started, I have a chapter called The Growing Pains of the Wailing Caverns, where that was one of the first dungeons that I built that got textured. They could actually play it. The founder of the company, Alan Adham, would play it. He says, this is good. Oh, this is awesome. Let's put the instance line at the very end, and that's when the dungeon will really begin. And I'm like, wait a minute, wouldn't you put the instance line at the mouth of the dungeon? He's like, no, I want people to get the flavor of the dungeon before the instance actually starts. And he liked, I think in EverQuest it's called Lower Guck, where people would kill monsters. And when there would be enough people killing monsters in that area, then they'd group up and they'd go do the serious content. Well, instancing was brand new. We had no idea how instancing was going to work. And so a lot of our game design decisions were based on this completely wrong model for geometry building. So we built Wailing Caverns. I originally built it where the big round room was the very end room. And he put the instance line at the end of that room and said, okay, now build the dungeon. So I built it further, and he's like, keep adding wings to the dungeon. There has to be more and more content, more and more content. And I'm a nerd. I like building dungeons, so I was certainly behind the idea. I my family would go on vacations, and we'd visit caves and that type of stuff. So I had all these ideas I wanted to try out. And, when you get to playtesting, years later, you find out, wow, this is not fun. This is not fun to do a six-hour dungeon. Nobody has time for that. But at EverQuest at the time, that's the investment. But when you try to capture a larger audience, not so much, so there's a lot of painful lessons that we learned with dungeons.
So we have like 10 minutes if anyone has questions at all.
Yeah, just throw
them out. Anything, you can throw them out at our huge audience.
I have a question.
Oh.
I forget, what dungeon was it that you put the annoying pit that you walk and then in the very beginning you fall into a pit?
At the very beginning, that was Wailing Briar something.
It was. I remember it wasn't like there was a monster or anything down there, but you'd be walking along, it looked like it just went straight, and then there was a hidden pit that you fall into every time. That was in Vanilla One. I forget the dungeon.
I don't remember that. Yeah, we couldn't really do a lot of skills areas because for an MMO, the way the server works is that positioning isn't realistic. Like, you think you're standing in one area. Like, if you could only see it if you were multi-boxing, if you had two characters that were grouped together. like positionally, it wasn't like people would be in different positions. So we actually couldn't do that. I can't remember what that area was.
It was one of the vanilla early dungeons.
Yeah.
I remember it being annoying. Like, if you jumped, you could jump over it.
Yeah.
But you always forget it was there.
Yeah.
So then you had to, like, go all the way back.
Oh, that might have been Wailing Cairns. I did have one area where it was a tiny jump, and
yes.
We learned that mazes aren't fun in Wailing Caverns. That was one of the things that, you know, we didn't know. Were mazes going to be fun? We had no idea. And so I built this whole maze section. Like, years later, after I left the World of Warcraft team, I talked to Scott Mercer, who's one of the dungeon scripters. And he said, yeah, we got rid of that maze. Sorry about that. I'm like, yeah, go ahead, get rid of that maze. Yeah, chop that thing down. You know, there's a lot of things that he doesn't know what I really, you know, take pride in. So, like, it's... I'm coming out with some articles about my stuff and all the dungeons that I think are successful. One of my most, the dungeon I hate the most is Ankh-Morash and the Hive Tunnels, because they're very disorienting. Oh yeah, we didn't have enough textures. It was one of the first dungeons I ever built, and it just didn't work. It's very confusing. Yeah. And one of the things that makes it confusing is there are not a lot of different textures. You don't remember, like, if you're going through a dungeon that has a robust texture set, you can actually build things differently, like Blackrock Depths. There's lots of different, like, the prison section looks nothing like the city section, which looks nothing like the quarry section. You know, you can do a lot of different things, but when you only had, I think the Hive Tunnels only had 8 textures in the entire set, it makes things harder. And
well, actually, what I was curious about is actually how many of the original developers, so I'll call it 3 years before it actually came out, had a background in classic role-playing, in Dungeons & Dragons or other.
That's actually that's a good question. How many developers were into MMOs or RPGs? Surprisingly few. Surprise, the designers, 120% were into RPGs, okay? Artists, not so much. You can't hire talented people who also are super geeked up on MMOs or super geeked up on, you know, they may like the genre, but the type of game, like an MMO only appeals to someone who wants to play something for 40 hours, you know, a week. That's a very... everyone was a gamer on the project, but there's all kinds of games. So, yeah, the very few of the artists. Roman was one of the only artists. I was the only dungeon designer to have played dungeons by the time the game shipped. None of the other designers had the 6-hour block in their lives to have a character high enough to play through a dungeon on the live servers. And to do that internally means you have to have all the cheat codes to create a valid character. You have to have a stable build that's going to be stable for 6 hours, which never happens internally. Like, just the build, the daily build crashing from stupid things, from a resolution change to a type of attack, crashes the build, and there goes your 6-hour playtest, you know.
I mean, that's like the biggest, if there's one huge difference between, especially now because you're hearing so much about Pathfinder 2E, of how they play. So they come up with mechanics, and then they play test it to death, and they play and play and play. And I remember when I came to visit you once, and you, me, and two of the devs played Warcraft 3, and they were actually the AI team, and they never got to play, ever. Yeah. Like, they never play. And, like, because when you're working on a game, or especially an MMO, like, 99% of your time is working on the actual code and problem solving,
right,
and getting the assets to work, and just to get the damn game to work. It's like, oh, what about it, Binky, being fun and playable?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we don't have time for that.
Yeah, other people will do that.
We have no time to actually play the game. We have to just make sure it works. So it's like, that's 100% different than here, where they come up with the game design because it's paper and pen, and they're like, okay, let's play it like 20,000 times to see if it's fun.
It's cheap to iterate.
Yes, that's also right. When you guys really, I remember that. It was like, I would be at, I'd be in the Blizzard offices, and like StarCraft or Warcraft 3 was shipping, and I remember they were still putting in, they were literally designing the levels as I was there, and it's like, doesn't it ship in 2 weeks? They're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, they're literally making the levels, like, oh, how big's the campaign? It's like, well, we finished 60% of it. It's like, we'll finish the other 40%. It's like, give 2 weeks to shipping. It's like, we'll finish it.
Yeah.
And they did. They like just were building it, and then everyone would play it.
Yeah.
And it was like, they would finish the game and throw it out the door. Because it gets to the last second is gameplay. Like, gameplay is like this much of the game.
There would be like a level that, like, 3 days before it ships. Now, we had patches. We had code patches, which are small, and art patches, which are a lot larger. And when you know you have a code patch, you can actually re-script things. But there'd be like 3 days, and they'll say, oh yeah, we haven't had any time. No one's tested human level 3 yet. Now we've got, you know, and then someone will script it in the weekend, they'll play it, they'll iterate it 3 times in a day, and then it'll be, you know, then it's out the window. But before that, you know, we've got, what was Warcraft 3? 5-6 years in development, and then the last few weeks, the content actually gets made.
So I remember you guys were there, I was there hanging out with you, and they were like, oh, we just finished the Dark Elves. Oh, by the way, here's the cheat codes so you guys can get through it faster. Yeah. I remember seeing the email. Like, this is 2 weeks before the damn thing's launching.
And if there's anything wrong, if melee is doing too much damage, then you can't playtest it. It's so imbalanced that all your playtest feedback is, it's all skewed, unless, you know, you have designers playing it. People usually, it's unbalanced, it's not fun, I don't want to play this anymore. That's usually how, and I'm talking developers, these aren't playtesters or fans or anything. The artists who aren't game designers, they don't have those sensibilities to really say, okay, this interface is working, you know. They only care about that the melee thing is unbalanced, so they don't want to play this game anymore. So, it's kind of crazy, but... it looks like we're running out.
We got 3 minutes.
Oh, we have time.
Anyone has other questions?
Yeah.
Anything about WoW? Now's your time.
Yeah.
Remember the time your character died and you're really angry?
Yeah.
Yell at him.
Yeah.
What?
Well, I'll throw one last question out. How did the actual development process then change within 1 month after release when they already knew they basically were going to have a massively financially successful
project? We didn't know for many months after we shipped that it was going to be financial. We actually thought at the time we should have shipped something like Diablo. Diablo had millions of, we had servers for about 500,000 people in North America. And never dreamed in a million years that there would be 1 million people playing in North America. We couldn't support them. Doesn't matter. We couldn't support them. But when you ship a game that's like offline, like Diablo, originally Warcraft was going to be an offline game that when you play in for real loot, then you connect to the Blizzard servers. But technical issues prevented that. So yeah, it was months. We had so many bugs after shipping.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
And
day one was great.
Day one, we loved it.
It was great.
And actually, what's funny, when WoW, I covered in the book ends at the launch of WoW and the disaster that the servers were actually down because it wasn't anything to do with our code. It's 100% a configuration on the hardware. And when they fixed that configuration, then the servers ran just fine. And we could slowly add more servers when we would convince banks, look, it's a successful game. We're making X amount of money. We can borrow more money to put more, you know, servers online. But we didn't know how fast people were going to go through the content. So we didn't know what the longevity of WoW was going to be. That was one of huge concerns that, you know, EverQuest, they'd make a dungeon, people would crank through the content, and then the servers would be melting. How dare you not make content for, you know, supporting the community that's launching your product? We didn't know if we'd be in that position 3 months after shipping WoW. We didn't have PvP working in WoW, and that felt like a failure to the team. Like we just didn't have the programming bandwidth to support.
You didn't have anything between level 40 and 60 really working.
Yeah, well.
It was a great game up to level 40, and then it was like, oh yeah, we forgot the rest of the content.
Well, we had two dungeons that were missing, Dire Maul and Moradon, and they were mid-level dungeons. And what was terrible about that is that we couldn't test content internally because we couldn't legitimately play a character from 1 to 60 internally. So we had major questions like, what's the behavior like going to be looking for groups? That's why our looking for group interface was so bad, is we really couldn't test player, you know, the politics behind getting together in a group and stuff like that. But we had so many things, and we knew it was going to be bad. It's not like nobody on the team, by the time the end of the project, we were convinced that we were going to be crunching after WoW had shipped just nonstop in order to keep creating content for the game. So
so we're out of time, but so this book, so when's it coming out? You're going to have the Kickstarter.
Yeah, well, we're going to have the Kickstarter in a couple months. That'll be on my website, is whenitsready.com, if you want to see what the updates are on the Kickstarter. But
yes, that's 320 pages, full color, lots of pictures.
Yeah.
You can see this horror. Look here. It's like the original map for World of Warcraft. Look how bad that is.
Yeah.
Look at that. It's terrible.
Yeah. Chris Benson painted that on the wall, and it was outdated in a week. Yeah. So, thanks, everybody. Right,
thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.